ideas and new technology are causing seismic shifts in the media industry. Where are we headed? What does it mean? Keep listening. Media strategist Gabriella Mirabelli talks with the brightest minds in entertainment and business. Meet the innovators, the risk takers, and the disruptors on the front lines of change from Hollywood, Wall Street, Silicon Valley, and beyond. The future is coming to a screen near you. Are you ready? This is the Up Next podcast with Gabriella Mirabelli.
Welcome to Up Next. I'm your host, Gabriella Mirabelli. Today, I'm interviewing Emmy Award-winning, multi-hyphenate, co-writer, co-director, co-star of Third Street Blackout and creative consultant on Billy on the Street, Jeremy Redleaf. Jeremy has obviously had a lot of success in a whole lot of areas, and we'll be talking about a lot of them. But what we'll mainly be focusing on is how he's broken down the walls of a number of very different forms of media to build his career in a way that wouldn't have been possible even 5 years ago. Jeremy, thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
Let's dive right in. You started by creating an award-winning web series, Odd Job Nation, right?
Yeah, that's correct.
At that time, web series and digital video was emergent. Right now, the paradigm of web series functioning as a calling card for filmmakers seems to have solidified. Since the name of this show is Up Next, I like to ask industry experts such as yourself what they think is coming up next. Do you see these series as an alternate to the indie festival circuit? Is the goal to build an audience, or is it to act as a stepping stone to land a deal with a more traditional network or production company? And do you think that it's evolving?
Oh, it's totally evolving. It depends on what people want. It's now possible to make something on Snapchat every day and build a following and never spend a dollar, or you can make short films and release them every week and host them on YouTube and build your platform there. Depends on what people want. But what I see in the future is it continuing to be a place where people can discover their voice, connect directly with an audience, and get discovered and be able to collaborate with more traditional brands that are not necessarily going to go away.
It's interesting you use that word discovered. I think that the challenge of our era is actually not one of sort of content, but content discovery. How do people find content? The more people who are out there making content, how do you cut through?
Content is king and distribution is God. It's getting harder and harder, to be honest. If I had the answer, I would be a very wealthy man. The danger is the race to the bottom, right? Creating content that's the video version of a listicle. There's a real danger of going that way. I think what it's going to be is being more honest, more speaking for audiences that are underserved, and building a tribe. You're going to have to be able to lead a group of people that want to be identified as part of your tribe.
As this evolution takes place, is it evolving in a way that's good or bad for creators? Is it something that is a viable long-term career or not?
That's a great question. You know, it's both. It's never been easier and less expensive to make something and get a following or find your audience or even sell it. All the barriers have been removed, so there's nothing stopping you. You could, in the past, you were able to say, well, you know, I need to raise $1 million to do that, you know, and if I don't, I can't. That excuse is gone. So from a creative spirit, it's the best time to be a person making things. From a career and a financial standpoint, it is a challenging time. You know, you have to get creative with the ways in which you generate revenue from your following. It's not always advertising or people buying your actual programming. But and then there's also the argument, find what it is that you love to do and do it for the rest of your life on nights and weekends. you know, a friend of mine just wrote a book, Sarah Benincasa just wrote a book called Real Artists Have Day Jobs. And I think there's something to that. If you've got that other thing that is keeping you in a shelter and food in your belly, and the rest of the time you're just spending on making the thing that you love, and, you know, maybe eventually it'll cash in, that's not a bad model either.
Okay, so that's for the creators. What about the traditional media players and platforms? Is this new way imploding business models, or is it creating an incubator which benefits them for free? What do you think?
In the last couple of years, we've seen all the big traditional players buy up all the digital powerhouses. All the multi-channel networks on YouTube, the Makers and the full screens of the world are now owned by the big boys. Scripps has been very active lately. They just bought up the biggest podcast advertising network. They're all terrified of the future and the grip they're losing on millennials and people that have traditionally been their bread and butter. So I think the story they would tell is that it's this great incubator and it's going to allow them to discover the next great creators. But they've had it real good for a real long time. And I think they're all scratching their heads about how to keep the cash cow flowing. You know, I think that these new services that are being launched are really interesting. NBC is launching CISO, which is a subscription comedy portal, and they can spend more than they make, but eventually they'll have to reconcile whether enough people are buying it to create content. And it'll be curious to see whether that's actually sustainable.
Exactly. And you've also worked in traditional linear television, specifically with Billy on the Street. What was that like?
Oh, that was awesome. I had a small role in that, just helping write some jokes. But I've worked a lot for MTV and Viacom, and it's all about the people you've got around you. You know, I've been fortunate enough to work with great people within a more traditional system. You're obviously constrained by legal and censors and everything that goes along with that. But you've also got a platform that is incredibly powerful. When we watch our shows on the air and you see the tweets coming out, it's unlike anything that ever happens on the web. There really is something to the water cooler of people watching it live and watching it on a traditional portal altogether.
One of the things that I see is that networks, when they're promoting content, treat their linear promotion separate from their social and digital promotion, that their strategies are not necessarily part of the same cloth. In your experience in working with your web series and working in television, how has social media changed things? I mean, you mentioned Twitter. Does it change? Does it feed back into your work?
For me, a young guy trying to connect directly with fans, it's changed everything. It's given me the opportunity to connect directly. For the movie, Facebook has been our most powerful platform. However, it's not possible to reach even the people that like our page without sponsored posts. The organic reach of a Facebook fan page is very small on its own, but it's affordable. So it's still a win for me.
You've co-directed a feature film, and I want to talk about that. And I want to give you the opportunity to first tell our listeners about your film and where they can find it. And then I want to dive in again to some of those things you just touched on. So tell us about the name and where they can see it.
Yeah, so it's called Third Street Blackout. It is going to be available on demand in iTunes starting Tuesday, July 5th. And it's a dark comedy set in the blackout of Hurricane Sandy. It's about a tech-obsessed couple that has to talk to each other during the blackout and figure out the relationship. And it's just a fun New York movie, and a bunch of great comedians are in it. Janine Garofalo, John Hodgman, Ed Weeks from The Mindy Project, Sasheer Zamata from SNL. And check it out if you get a chance.
Fantastic. So you mentioned Facebook, and you mentioned that the reach of just the simple fan page, just they hijacked it. Who are they and what does that mean?
That's a aggressive language, but they is Facebook. By hijacked, it means they started to monetize the platform. It used to be that if you were a fan of a page and that page posted, it was likely that you would see the post. And now it's about 30% of your fans, or maybe even less, see a post. In order to actually even reach the people that are fans of you, you have to spend $5, $10. Which is actually interesting because it requires you to question the media you're putting out there. It's no longer free. There's actually a cost to it. So it can allow you to make sure that you're doing something that really has value and really deserves to be seen.
Well, it's interesting because there was just an announcement in the Wall Street Journal today that Facebook is changing their algorithm and they're going to prioritize individuals over publisher posts. It sounds like they were already doing it. And it seems like if the solution is just, you know, promote, pay, It's an interesting thing because if these fans want to see your stuff, are they serving their users?
They say if you don't know who the product is, it's you. I don't think that they necessarily serve us. I think that the deal is we get a free service, and due to that, we're going to be marketed to and exploited in that regard. It would be interesting if they offered a pay version to sort of change the dynamic.
Well, I mean, they don't exist without your content to a large degree.
I still believe in the power of word of mouth. How I discover stuff is when people I know legitimately fall in love with something. I saw The Lobster not because I saw a million ads for that movie. I saw it because four people were like, you have to see this movie. I don't think that's going to change. And I think, and if they are tweaking the algorithm, I think that that's a nod towards people really do want to discover things that their friends enjoy.
Research shows that people today respond most to recommends from their friends. Secondly, they would prefer a real individual from a Yelp review to a professional, a celebrity endorsement, that there really is a desire for authenticity.
Yeah. How do you find out about stuff? Who do you look to?
I look to my friends and people and recommends, exactly. And so it isn't surprising. How did you fund your film? Did you work through Kickstarter and Indiegogo? And were you using some of these new ways to fund your picture?
We were able to raise equity funding for production. And that was done by sheer hustle. I just asked everybody I've ever met if they were interested in investing. And, you know, a very small percentage said yes, but enough that we were able to get it off the ground. And the same with my partner, Ian Farsad. At the end, we needed a little more to get it to the finish line, and so we did a Kickstarter campaign after we had already gotten it in the can. And what I liked about that was it was like, it wasn't saying, hey, fund my dream. It was saying like, hey, we made this thing. We need a little help getting to the end. Are you willing to help us get there? And so it was a different exchange, a different crowdfunding exchange that I really enjoyed. And those people that backed us are now helping us get the word out as we go into our digital release.
One thing that's interesting is it seems like some of your recent work is really deeply motivated by how technology impedes communication between people.
100%.
So how do you feel about how technology is changing how we communicate, and what are the implications for business and society?
Well, we're Skyping right now, which is only possible because of technology. It allows us to connect with more people than we would be able to, you know, in the past. And that also makes it easier than ever to hide. I can't remember the last time a friend called me on the phone. I think if we're not careful, it's going to erode the idea of physical community. We're all social beings. We all want to be connected in real life in a real way. And I think at some point, we're going to see a real countercurrent, you know, disconnecting, unplugging, going offline for periods of time, taking an internet sabbatical, being like a cultural thing. The implications for entertainment and business are that events are actually more popular than ever. People really want to come out and experience something with other people. You know, if it's not a movie in a theater, it's like a Tough Mudder or an immersive experience like Sleep No More or a crazy concert. There still is that human desire to be in person and experience things with people.
I think the other thing that's interesting to me is you defy labeling. You are not an actor or a writer or a director or a filmmaker or an entrepreneur. You're all of these things, which is true of many people who are digital creators. And even Odd Jobs seems inspired by the resistance to be beholden to a label. Can you be great if you are doing everything?
Startups talk about this a lot. At first, you want generalists. You want the first people in a startup to be well-versed at everything and be able to jump in and figure stuff out. And at some point in your growth, you want specialists. I've learned so many different things because it excites me and also ensures that I'm never bored or never too reliant on one profession to provide all of my income and satisfaction. But the challenge and the opportunity is to learn how to outsource and learn how to trust specialists. You can learn things to move faster, but at some point you need to learn to let go and empower other people to do things that are not worth your time.
What else are you working on? What are your new projects?
So we're just finishing up the movie, which has been a really big three-year endeavor. I'm developing a couple new scripts. I just got hired to direct a movie that's shooting later this summer for a Hollywood company, which is really exciting. And developing a podcast of my own. And as well as a couple of immersive experiences and a VR experience. So just developing a new slate of stuff. And in the meantime, I'm available on all the social media outlets, you know, writing and posting and doing all that kind of thing.
And what is the thing that scares you the most?
The thing that scares me the most is wondering whether at some point there will be no such thing as making something that matters. Sort of like if you ever saw that movie Idiocracy, where just like it doesn't, you know, we've lost this cultural tool of telling stories. That's the scariest possibility for me. Are we headed towards a place where we're all in a civilization of one?
Where everybody's talking and nobody's listening.
Exactly.
A lot of YouTubers are not able to earn a living at what they're doing, and yet the work requires full-time effort. Do you see it changing?
Well, I think that's the secret for a lot of media is that not many people are making a good living, but we all love this thing that we do so much. You're seeing it on YouTube, especially because there are some huge success stories. And YouTube also takes a big percentage of ad revenue. So you're also seeing a lot of the big YouTubers trying to get off of YouTube. For example, Fullscreen, one of the big multi-channel networks, just launched their own subscription service because they just realized that was a much better use of their time and bandwidth and money. To build an audience on YouTube, you need to be posting every week. Does that need to take you all week? Maybe not. The advertising revenue is not enough to sustain yourself. You need to look at other models. So I think one of the most interesting ones is Patreon, which is a website where you can get reoccurring donations from fans. So, hey, I'm going to produce one podcast per week. And if I do that, I would love to have $5 per month from you. So fans can sign up to do that. And so then artists know, okay, every month I have $700 coming in and my rent is $600. And so I'm good. As long as I do the podcast and people don't drop off, this works. This is sustainable. I think we're going to see a lot of more people going towards that subscription model because it's the only way to be able to predict your income.
As an independent filmmaker, how did you plug into these people who have high profile? What enabled you to make that connection? Because then that, I'm sure, helped with the funding conversation.
You know, Nagin and I have both been in the business for a long time and have built up networks of people. And Janine Garofalo is someone that Nagin had done stand-up with, so she was able to just make a direct ask. We also had a casting director who allowed us to reach out to bigger people. And, you know, actors do want to work on good things. And if they're available and it's in New York, that makes it pretty easy to jump on. It's just a matter of building a package and telling the story of why this is something worth your time, why people are going to see it, and why you're going to be better off doing it. And that takes some audacity. Day one of production, I was directing Janine Garofalo and giving her direction. Like, she's a comedy legend, and I'm a young filmmaker with a dream. It requires some faking it till you make it. You know, independent film has always been a place for actors to discover and show new parts of themselves. If you give them an opportunity to play something that they would never be considered for, that's appealing to them. You know, Sarah Silverman just did an independent film last year where she played like a depressed, coke addicted mother. She cries and she's completely serious. And that's a role that she's not getting offered in a big film. But she did it and went to Sundance. And I'm sure now that she's being considered for all sorts of different things like that.
What other forces of disruption do you see down the pike?
Well, I just tried high-end VR for the first time, and I was very impressed by the immersive possibilities. I think it's going to be held back for as long as you need a headset and need to be plugged in. If you remove the gear, that's when things start to really change. I think we still want to watch things with other people. And if you have a headset on you, it's going to be hard. But there are a couple of companies that are working on the combination of augmented reality and VR. The last wave was like the Uber of X. And I think the next wave is X plus artificial intelligence. We're going to see everything get smarter and get more personalized. And I think that's going to make people want more personal experiences.
What about privacy?
What about it?
Nobody wants Big Brother, and yet we'll allow Sony to have a camera in our house and in our refrigerator and in our Nest, you know, and that they're hackable. You're tracked. You know, you send an email that mentions floor lamps, and all of a sudden, when you go on your social media, an array of floor lamps is right there for you. Is that something you want, or does that give you the willies?
You know, everyone's got a different bubble of trust. We give these companies a lot, and I think for most people, if the bubble pops, then they put up a wall. So, you know, I have an Amazon Echo in my apartment, and if there was some horror story where someone was able to use it to do X, you know, that would change my relationship with it. So, you know, there's a real trust with all these devices. And once that's broken, I think you're in a tougher spot. There are some people that are just going to be scared no matter what and just sort of, you know, rebel against the changes. But if the technology makes our life significantly better, I think people are still going to want it, right? Like, if it just makes our life easier, we're going to go for it until our trust is broken.
To dive back again, actually, to the issue of discovery, you're promoting and launching your film. How is the promotion and launch of your film today different from the promotion and launch of your web series way back when? What have you noticed that's changed? What's more difficult today? What's easier today?
So there are obviously more platforms to choose from and try things out on. And what we did with the movie was, you know, at first we said, let's try to be everywhere and see where we get the most traction. So, all right, let's get on Instagram. Let's get on Vine. Let's get on Facebook. Let's get on Twitter. Let's get on Snapchat, and let's see what people are responding to. And we found for us, for the movie, for the people that were interested in it, Facebook and Instagram were the two most powerful platforms. So then we decided to put all our marbles in those baskets. Is that the right metaphor?
Yes.
Eggs in the basket?
Eggs in baskets.
We put eggs in baskets, and you get the idea.
Yes.
So I think that what else has changed is that, you know, people, the story behind the thing has become so much more important. We're not just selling a movie. We're selling an idea. We're selling, you know, we're starting a movement about a conversation about technology. And so that's changed where we post it. You know, when I did Odd Jobs and Odd Job Nation, that was on YouTube and oddjobnation.com. But those aren't social platforms. You know, YouTube is not the best social platform. And so, you know, you're seeing a lot more people upload things directly to Facebook because that's where that's gets more mileage and people are are having deeper conversations about that media. And that's where people are having their conversations. So you're seeing a change in where the media is living, and also how you're telling the story of the universe.
When you're dealing with creating your content to promote your film on Instagram and on Facebook, those are two different platforms. What would you say? How does what you make differ from one platform to the other?
Interestingly, both owned by the same company and also have just combined their advertising platforms. What's the same is that I think people respond to authenticity and honesty and an inside look at how things are really made and what's really going on. What's different is the way in which people take in that information, right? So on Facebook, Facebook is a place to share other articles, have big conversations, also share media. And Instagram is a very visual platform, so it's an eye-catching photo and then a story, or it's a video that can live within a minute environment. I think story and authenticity is crucial in both platforms, but you're sometimes the media works on both, and sometimes we have to totally reinvent the posts for Instagram that we're killing on Facebook, but just aren't quite working for Instagram. And I think the problem is that, in an effort to save time, everyone uses these programs like Hootsuite or Buffer that allow you to post everywhere at once, but every platform works differently. And I think there's a missed opportunity to not really customizing the piece of content for the specific platform.
Did you find it at all challenging when things autoplay on Facebook, it's silent, and I think you have 4 seconds for the potential viewer to make that swipe decision? So how do you, when you're approaching creating video content for Facebook, how do you craft it?
There's a great new book that just came out by Steven Pressfield called Nobody Wants to Read Your Shit. And it's about this concept of how to approach media in this day and age. And it's like, you have to be so brilliant that people can't help but pay attention. And that's quicker than ever. So like now, right, you have 4 seconds to attract attention now. So that means your first 4 seconds better be engaging or surprising or interesting or unique in some way. You can't just assume that people are going to want to read your crap. I'm constantly asking myself, does this work from the first beat? And if I look back at the things that have been most successful that I've done, the beginnings have been great. I think it's totally underestimated how important those first couple of seconds are.
Are you the gatekeeper for everything that goes out? I mean, or is that something that you've delegated and devolved to somebody else?
For me, personally, I'm the gatekeeper. I care too much and I've done too much work in this space. I've tried to outsource my social and I haven't quite found anyone that I really trust to do it. I would love to one day be able to share that burden, but because how valuable it is to the things I'm building, it feels like a pretty crucial part of the story, and it requires it's a real artistry.
If you were to have the amazing success, the dream success, the thing to come true that you desperately want, what would that be?
I would love to build a company with other people that, much like Ashton Kutcher's company Catalyst, can do things in any space in a really big way, and when we do something, people pay attention to it. What I want is a platform that allows us to not have to always fight, grassroots fight through the noise to break through, but a platform where people, just because of the trust we've built up, people are paying attention. I think that's really where I'm headed.
To be part of the cultural conversation.
Yeah, you want to make a dent in the universe and have your ideas taken seriously is all we could ask for, right?
What is the biggest up next thing that you see on the horizon?
Not to be boring, but I do think that it's going to be, if not VR, it's in the world for years, gamers have been obsessed with games because of how immersive they are. And I think that will become a more of a mainstream desire and experience. So whether it's in a VR headset or with augmented reality or in a a 4D movie theater that's, you know, smells like the movie and your seats move, I think people want to totally escape, totally be immersed in the world, and have the most moving experience possible, right? Like, media has this ability to cut through and make us feel things that we don't feel in other parts of our lives. And I think people want that and look for that from media. And so the tools that are becoming available that are making that more possible, I see as going to is being the way to have those experiences happen.
Okay, I have one last add-on question to that, and that is, do you see a gender difference? This big new thing, does it have a potential blind spot as far as women and girls go? Or is it something that they will come to it once it exists and it will then morph into something that interests them? What do you think?
No, I think you're exactly right. I think it all starts with having female voices in the conversation. You know, there have been plenty of studies that have come out this year about how pathetic the numbers of women directors that are given a chance to make things is, and you know, that really needs to change. Women are going to be attracted to this if they're attracted to the stories that are being told, and that are being told from their point of view. And so I think it's a real missed opportunity. It's a shame and a real missed opportunity to not give more women a chance to tell their stories, and to the more diverse the stories, the more enriched the you know, the platforms are. I remember Master of None won, I don't know if it was the Golden Globe or whatever, they won a big award, and they said, thanks for making it so easy for us by not having, you know, many shows by people of color. You know, like their shtick was like, it was easy for us to stick out. And maybe it shouldn't be so easy. And I think the same goes for you know, female-centric stories.
Well, we've reached the end of our episode of Up Next, and I'd like to close by thanking a few important people who have been indispensable to bringing this program to life. Of course, first and foremost, thank you to today's guest, Jeremy Redleaf, for doing such an incredible interview. Thank you to the incomparable voice artist, my friend, Rob Naughton. Our production team over at Microfame Media, thank you. And of course, most importantly, all of you, the members of our amazing audience, thank you. I'll be talking to you again next week, right here on Up Next.